This is When Orla Met, a conversation with and about some of the leading athletes, engaging brains and fascinating characters in sport. Today's guest is one of the most successful cyclists the sport has ever produced. A former world champion on the road and the track, and the second most successful stage winner in Tour de France history with 30 victories to his name. Yet for all his fame and fortune, Mark Cavendish says he feels most at home where he grew up, on the Isle of Man. He still has a home here, as well as family bases in Tuscany and Essex, but of the three, he spends most of his time training and living on the rock. So that's where I went to catch up with the rider, long known as the Manx Missile, and chatted to him just after a group training ride and just before he met up with his mum, for which he invited me along. His mum owns a dancewear shop in Douglas, and I was curious to find out more about Mark's ballroom dancing background, as well as what he was like as a child. Now, unfortunately, there were a few technical issues with this recording, so the quality isn't quite what I would have liked, but I urge you to stick with it. The ear does adjust, and hopefully you'll agree the chat is worth the effort. This is When Orla Met, Mark Cavendish.
So how was the ride this morning then? It started beautifully. Looked lovely, if a bit blustery.
Ah, it was nice. It's always good. It doesn't matter the weather as long as you've got a group. Like, you know, I told you before, like, what's so good about here is it doesn't matter. Like, every day we meet 9:15 at the NSC, and it doesn't matter the weather, there's always going to be someone there. Sometimes it's 3 or 4 people, sometimes it's 10, like more like it was today. And all different, there's pros, like sometimes we've got Stannard, Swifty, Pete, Mark Christian out. There's women like Anna and Lizzie Olden rides, there's juniors, there's some of the juniors on the ride today. And the 23s, vets, there's a 60-year-old, and it don't matter, you kind of ability or like everyone meets and goes out together and kind of looks after each other, you know. It does ramp up later on, but the island's so small that you're never that far from home anyway, like, you know. Not that small, but it's small enough that within half hour you're going to be home anyways.
I think a lot of people would be surprised by that you would come here and join in what's essentially what can be a bit of a club run, really, with all levels.
I love it. Like, that's why I still ride a bike. Like, that's what I like riding a bike for, is to go out and ride with other people and just to ride, you know. Obviously, as the season ramps up, I have to get more specific. But I don't particularly enjoy being specific with my training. Never have. I do it. I'm not saying, like, I'm still fortunate to do it, to get to ride my bike at least. But, still, it's not even like just riding is my bread and butter. Like, I enjoy just riding. I like coming over. It's grippy, so you always get the workload in over here just because the terrain and the weather conditions, it toughens you up a bit anyway, so.
So I was asking everybody this morning what they thought the main reason was for the Isle of Man being so strongly connected to cycling and producing such good cyclists. What would you say? Is it that the weather, the grippiness, yeah, the conditions?
Well, you've seen it here. Like, you have to enjoy riding your bike if you're going to go out on it over here, you know? It's not like you go out because it's fair weather and you can go out and get a tan line. Like, you have to enjoy riding your bike, and two wheels is the way of life here. Like, everyone grows up watching the TT. It'll be the same in Northern Ireland where you're from, isn't it? Like, it's just like everyone's a little bit nuts and they like that, like that road racing on the motorbikes. There's not as much finesse as say MotoGP, but they just got like massive swingers on them. Like, they're just like just ballsy, you know. And that's kind of the way it is here. And people, when I first started, there was, on a Sunday, you'd get 50 people out on a push bike, like, and split into these 4 different groups going out on club runs, depending on ability. That was 20 years ago, you know.
So you mentioned the mentality of the people here, and I've heard a few people now say that Manx people are mad. What do you mean by that?
Just, I don't know, like, I think it comes from it being a small place that, like, class isn't really an issue. Everybody knows each other, and that lends itself to the fact that everyone sees themselves as equals, you know. There's no real social status, it's a nice way to be, but it means that you don't feel you have to conform to anything, you know. So Yeah, I think, but I don't know in terms of speed and that, but I don't know. It's, yeah, I think it's just that fact that everyone knows each other and you don't really have to conform or try and be someone you're not.
What's it like for you now then? Everyone knows each other and everybody obviously knows you since you were a little kid, and you know that you're this huge global sports superstar. I'd imagine when any time you go home, wherever you're from, you get to drop your guard a little bit, I guess, and be a bit more yourself. But can you do that here?
Up till, there was quite a lot of years, even after I was successful as a professional, that it was the only place in the world that I could come back and just be Mark. Mm. I could just be me. I wasn't Mark Cavendish, and that was real nice. It has changed now. You know, you'll be in Tesco's and it's like someone comes up and they're like, didn't expect to see you in here, and you're like, do me shopping, you know what I mean? But that wasn't until just the last few years really. Obviously as soon as people get wind when I'm back, I don't think they appreciate how busy I am, that oh, will you come and do this, come and do that, and it's unfortunately not just over here. I have to say no to more things than I say yes to, you know. So that gets a bit hard because people, like I said, with people knowing you, they kind of take it personally. I'm proud to always come back here. I always emphasise the fact I'm from here. The more kind of world travels I get, I see the wider world, but I still like coming back here. It's home, innit? You know, it's where I grew up, and I just like it. Despite its weather and that, I really like it.
And yet, away from here, you live such a different life, don't you? I mean, sometimes jet set, not always, but it's certainly a very privileged life. You enjoy that side of it as well.
I guess so. It is my life, so I don't really know any different. But I do know I'm fortunate to have the life I do. But I think I'm always keen to stress there's a difference between being fortunate and being lucky. I'm not lucky to be where I am. I worked hard. I spent a lot of time away from home. I don't keep in contact with my schoolmates anymore, despite the fact I'm here a lot. I was away so much and they grew up all together while I was away. I do spend a lot of that time on my own. A lot of time on my own. You see the wins and that on TV. You see endorsement deals, but you don't see the training that goes into it and the time on your own going away to race at a specific location or train at a specific location. There's a lot goes on behind what you see on TV or in photos, and that means I'm not lucky, but I'm definitely fortunate to be able to do all that. I do what I love for a living, and that makes me happy. So.
And are you okay with all that side of it, with so much time on your own? Is that something that you're comfortable with, or something you've learned to just get used to?
It's what you got to do. You know, it's not nice, but it is how it is, you know. I got family, and I don't see my family. But I know that from doing what I do, I give them a good life, so I see the kind of positives in it that way. I always say, did you ever read Andre Agassi?
He said
it, hate tennis. And I've always thought when I seen it, I was like, I don't know if he actually hated tennis. Maybe he did. But at the end of the day, if you're a professional sports person, the reason you're good at it is because you did it more, you know? And you do more because you love it. Now, it's easy to get confused with, not liking sport, not liking your life as that, you know? And I think there's sometimes away from the actual sport that can get, it's not what you dream of. But at the end of the day, I think if he looked deeper, maybe he'd say, I actually did like tennis. It's, at the end, the lifestyle was a bit, as you get older, as you get family, the lifestyle side of it is it does take away from seeing your kids grow up, spending time with your wife and stuff like that.
Have you ever thought you've fallen out of love with cycling then?
No. Yeah, sometimes. But, and I think I've always been quite clear with it, but it's quite quickly, like, as soon as I actually get on my bike, I realise it's not the case that I've fallen out of love with cycling. You know what I mean? Like, I love riding my bike. I just love it, like, you know?
And there is maybe a fun element as well to the lifestyle, isn't there, in terms of, I mean, I always think with cycling in particular, like, it's quite a gypsy lifestyle, it's quite a bohemian lifestyle to a certain extent, travelling all the world, seeing different places, being with different people, you know, it's quite exciting as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that rootlessness sometimes can be quite fun.
It is when you're younger, like yeah. I say, when you've got family, you'd rather just be a bit in the same place, you know, but yeah, no, I enjoy it. I think especially if you've got a good group around you with your team, you know. I think it might even be different still if it was an individual sport and you were always just on your own. But honestly, if you have a good team, it's like going away on camp. We always used to say that at HTC. It's like this at Dimension Data as well. But I remember Suhas Carnarvon saying to me, HTC, it's like going on camp with your mates like every week, you know. And that's quite nice, you know, you form a bond and it's not like going away on a lad's holiday.
Yeah.
You know, you...
Not quite as raucous
no,
as that.
It's like, I've got a lot of friends in the military, you know, and, okay, the consequences of what they do is a bit different, but they're still the same, they're going out with their mates, they're spending time, they're working together, they have to trust each other with their lives, you know, and you form a special bond with that. It's hard to kind of explain. But that's something I really like, you know.
Because you mentioned this before, you said that maybe if you weren't a cyclist, you would have liked to have been in the army.
Yeah, but honestly, I've always been patriotic, you know. But it's really since working with Help for Heroes and, you know, working in a small part with the military that I kind of understood that I'd want to, you know, which was maybe too late. But just how it works, it does appeal to me, you know, as well as that patriotic side, I guess. So.
What do you mean how it works?
Like the regimen you have, the fact that you're out there looking out for your mates, you know. It's like honestly, like the laugh I have with my friends who are in the military is like. It's wicked, like, it's special people that are in the military, like, you know, like, they're special people, and they're the best people in the world to get along with, and people you know you can trust, you know.
That's quite funny about you, I think, the sort of two sides of it, whereby you're known for being such an individual and doing things your way, and yet this appreciation of and love of teamwork and working with other people.
I think it's like... Okay, I know what works for me physically. That's training. I know what works for me, how to win a race, you know. But I can't win without that team. I think I'm one of the few people that understands that I don't have eight guys riding for me. I'm the ninth part of a unit, you know. And a lot of guys, a lot of sprinters, a lot of GC, they have eight guys who built... to work for them. But fundamentally, cycling is all sport. It's about displaying sponsors, you know. And cycling, best way to display your sponsors cross the finish line first. So we as a team have to work out how to cross the finish line first. It just so happens I'm the last part of the sequence of nine people, and I really see it like that. And I think that's why I hope that my teammates feel that, like, we win. You know, they haven't worked for me to win, we win. I hope they feel that, because that's how... I don't just try and make it seem like I see it, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, but I know that creates something special, you know, when we know we're doing something, you know, together, like, you know. Technically, I think in the future cycling, I see and I hope that you know, a team wins, you know. Like, at the end of the day, a striker in football is usually paying more and usually gets the endorsement deals, but the team wins at the end of the day. The striker, but then again, the striker has that pressure on their shoulders to deliver.
Yeah, the responsibility.
Exactly. And that's what comes as being the last man, as being a sprinter or, like, ultimately I stand on the podium at the end, but if Renshaw messes up or someone in front of him messes up, I'm the one that shoulders the responsibility for not winning, you know. I'm the one that has to think, have to get out of the situation, try and win anyway. But if it's a situation that I can't come back from, I still have to shoulder that responsibility, and that's the seesaw you're on with that. And that ultimately, that's why some guys get paid more than others and things like that. It's not really, it's the expectation to deliver, you know. It's like anything, it's like any job, you know. Ultimately, a manager might not do actually the hands-on work and stuff, but anything happens, they show the responsibility. It's how it is.
But to be able to deliver with that responsibility then takes, in any walk of life, manager, whatever, takes a certain amount of self-confidence, self-belief that you can do it. And you're known for being, or displaying at least, confidence on the bike, off the bike. Have you ever been plagued by the kind of doubts that most of us have?
Absolutely. Like, I'm only confident when I know I've done the work that does it. Like, if I know I'm not... For instance, the Tour de France last year, like, I came to the Tour de France for 6 weeks training after Epstein-Barr virus. The thing is, people do not realise what Epstein-Barr virus, unless you have it. I would not wish it on anybody. Like, that's the hardest thing I've ever done in my career, is try and come back from that. Like, now I have days when I'm just on my hands and knees still, and that's going to be, sometimes it's 2 years, but it could be the rest of my life. The days, 2-3 days where I just can't even move. That's still now, and I'm a professional cyclist. It was horrible, and I only had 6 weeks training after 2 months off to get ready for the Tour de France, arguably the hardest sporting event on the planet. And then, like, I don't have confidence going in the Tour last year, like, because I don't know where I am. I know I haven't done the work I need to do it, but I know I've done enough work that I can come in. And I knew I was actually confident for the later stages, but definitely not for the beginning. But I'm not going to say I'm not confident. Definitely, if I know I've done the work, I know I'm ready, you know. And if I haven't, or there's consequences for sure, and I'm not confident doing it. I still try, but I'm not confident.
How difficult was that recovery psychologically then, as well as physically, just dealing with it and the doubt that probably brings?
You got to try and be matter of fact, you know. You just got to do it. You just got to do what you got to do. It means split days. It means riding. Like, you can do 7 hours, 6 hours, but you build up a fatigue there that if you split it, then you do the same work well, but without building up fatigue. So to get out in the morning, sit home and do nothing in between and go out again on my own, because the kind of intensity I was doing, other guys that are training for the Tour and are doing more, quite hard, but it's my job, you know. And my teammates are banking on that I do everything I possibly can to get well, and my sponsors are banking on I do everything I possibly can to get well. And I'm not paying 100 euros to ride the Tour de France, you know. I'm paid by my, I don't pay, it's not a sportif, you know. I'm paid to go and do a job there, so I have to just try and get there as best as possible, I guess.
You seem to get quite into Lego during that by the looks of it on Instagram.
It's really good. It's not just Lego, like anything that's, let's say, like a kind of monotonous task.
Almost meditation.
Yeah. You just go in a zone, like you're doing that, and you don't think of anything else, you don't stress yourself, you just do it. And Lego's the best way, and a way I enjoy to kind of do that.
What's the most complicated Lego piece you've ever made?
There's ones that are time consuming, like the Tower Bridge is pretty time consuming.
Is it?
The Sydney Opera House. I did that in the Classics a few years ago. I was in the hotel when I was at Quickster, and the Sydney Opera House, that was pretty fiddly.
What do you do with them afterwards?
Some of them, they're around in the house, Frey smashed the Sydney Opera House actually a couple of weeks ago.
Oh no, yeah, going to do it again?
No, that's the instruction. But it's not really like about having the thing at the end, it's about the process of kind of doing it that I enjoy.
Do you still feel that desire to win as much as ever? Do you still get as much from winning?
Yeah. Oh, I still love it. I still love winning, still hate losing. It hasn't changed. The reasoning behind it has changed, obviously. It's not about fighting the world anymore. It's about making the family proud, stuff like that. But definitely the desire is still there.
That's interesting. Yeah. But fighting the world, that's what it used to be about.
Yeah.
In what way?
I don't know, really. I can't really explain it. I don't even know why, but I had a chip on my shoulder. Like, lots of people all doubt me, they still do. But I used to let it bother me, and I'd always say, I'm going to prove them wrong, and I did. But now it just brushes off, you know.
Is it kind of a good thing, then, to have a chip on your shoulder, do you think, if you want to make really it in anything?
It can be, but to a point, it's the same reason that, you know, like, I was seen as an angry little man, you know, and I haven't lost that kind of moniker, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm not anymore. I'm 32 years old. I'm grown up, but I still deal with that now from 10, 12 years ago, I guess. You know.
Does that annoy you?
Like, at the end of the day, if someone's willing to judge my personality when they haven't met me, it's not really worth caring what that person thinks anyway. You know what I mean? Like I said, you learn so much about life when you grow up. Like, you just brush it off, I guess.
I want to ask you about, we're chatting about the process of, you're saying about when you've got that responsibility and it's up to you to navigate your way around things and make sure that you try to win. Anytime anyone talks to you after a race, you seem to have this precision memory for exactly everything that's happened. I mean, how is that? I've never come across anyone else who has that.
I don't know, it's just the method, I don't really know.
But does it happen slowly in your head in some way, or?
I don't know, it's kind of a thing, if you go and see a sports psychologist, they tell you, get rid of emotion, mm-hmm. concentrate on the task. But I always did that anyway. at the end of the day, and it wasn't until I, spoke, obviously, to Steve Peterson that I understood it. But I couldn't learn anything because I already did it. Visualising, when you're out training, instead of, right, you visualise winning. I always did that. When I was a kid, I was out pretending I was Yoel Muse on the Cobbles, you know, or pretending I was Eric Zorb or something like that. That's what I did. I seen a finish line. You know, the 30 mile an hour sign is the finish line.
Yeah.
You know? And, yeah, I guess, yeah, so going back, the teacher put emotion out and I always did, instead of most of the guys, my rivals, they're big guys, especially the German guys, they're big guys, and they put out 50% more power than me, max power. And that's a lot. Mm. And, but I think they conform to the romanticism about sprinting, which is adrenaline and it's going, but that means your heart rate's higher.
Mm-hmm.
And that means when your heart rate's higher, when you've got adrenaline, when you've got fear, when you've got anger, when you've got something built up, it takes off from the process, which is just delivering, you know. And there are times when that emotion comes in, and sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but it's definitely waste my energy. I'm best just concentrating, and I know what I have to do. And there's been times in the past where I was just so much faster that sometimes I didn't have to think tactically. But as like more guys have come through. You know, I have to, there's times when I have to work out how to beat them. It's not just about wait for luck, you have to work out how to beat them. And for that, you have to concentrate on how you think they're going to move and what you know you have to do to beat them, you know, and that just takes kind of, it's just a series of calculations. It's a kind of algorithm, really, you know. It takes away from, you know, what you read in glossy cycling mags and that. It's like, it's how it is, really. So.
Do you have quite a mathematical brain then, do you
think?
Yeah, 100%
really? Mathematical. You can hear I'm not good with my words. I never have been. But I have a complete mathematical brain. Like, that's what I was good at school. That's how I think. My dad's the same. Like.
So what, do you see things in terms of calculations or just simple logic? Or how does that work? Because I don't have a mathematical brain, so I don't know how mine works.
Everything is mathematical. Like, I see things in rooms, like lines and stuff. Like, no, it's not rain, man. But, like, I drew, like... Yeah, like, I see furniture, and, like, look logically how that works, and if it, you know, and it's like, even so down to, like, interior design, it's a kind of logical look at things rather than a artistic kind of look at it.
So I remember when you were building your house in Italy, and I remember you saying that you wanted it to be your absolute dream house, and you were so involved in every little bit of it. How did that all turn out? Is it your dream house?
Yeah, it's got everything I want.
Did you design it all?
Yeah, like everything. It wasn't like, to the point, like, you know, I try and work out the engineering side of it. You know what I mean? Like, could that work? How would it affect? Like that, you know, if you put glass there, how's it going to affect the structure, if there's supposed to be a wall and stuff like that. It's got everything I want. I got ripped off of it. It cost me a fortune, but I'm really happy with it.
Where do you feel most at home, actually?
Here, Adamant. Like, without a doubt, like, this is home, like, you know. Well, obviously, it's nice to be with the family, but... If I refer to home, it's always here, and I'm here more than anywhere else, you know.
Thank you.
Hi, Mum. Sorry.
Hello. I'm so sorry. Hi, Ola. Lovely to meet you.
Oh, your hands are cold.
I know, it's freezing out there.
I know.
I've got really bad circulation as well, though.
Yeah, I'm nice and warm.
It's really nice. Actually, what I want to ask first of all, because this is a dance shop that you've got, what he was like as a dancer. He was good.
He was better,
yes, it? His partner was the real dancer, and they looked good together, and yes, he loved, but it was the competitive spirit of it. That's what got him into dancing, that competition, because ballroom dancing is very, very competitive.
Well, I was going to ask how you got him into it. How did it all start?
He wanted to do ballroom dancing himself. Came home one day and said, right, I want to go
one of your
do ballroom dancing.
Did it, didn't he?
Yes, a few of my friend's daughters did it, and Mark just wanted to do ballroom dancing.
Do you remember what it was that got you into it?
No.
That sparked that, no?
No, I said I'd give it a go. Like, I was always up for giving anything a go, I guess. Did athletics, football, gymnastics.
Yes, it was very sporty. Everything is, because he did, he went to athletics, they went to tennis, gymnastics, badminton, but the dancing was a competitive spirit.
Well, you were always good at driving us around and that to different things. Like, they always, like, Mum and Dad always support us with doing things, like, not just sport, like,
they used to go to England with the gymnastics, didn't you?
Oh, really?
Yes. They were very, very good at...
I didn't know you did gymnastics.
He was very good at gymnastics.
I think I stopped when I was like 11 or 12, didn't I?
Yes, slightly younger, because the cycling, of course, took over. But you did athletics until you were about 12, 13.
Football did at high school. Dancing until I was 15.
Yes, yes. Mm. He had to give up the dancing.
But at the end of the day, like dancing, like if I stopped, I was letting someone out.
Mm. You
know? Actually, there was times when I missed going away to race because it was a dance competition, and obviously, when you're a kid, there's no team, you race on your own. And but yeah, if I'd have pulled out of competition, it's not just myself that suffers from it, you know, it's my partner, and that's fine.
You had a very understanding partner, though, and once you turn 16 anyway, they tend to give up the ballroom dancing because they have to go into the adults. So it just became a progression, didn't it, that he gave up that and was able to go away more.
That must have been quite exhausting for you, was it, to do all that ferrying around? And I always think of the parents of sporty kids, because I want my daughter to be really sporty, and I think, oh, I'm going to be exhausted taking her everywhere. But that's part of it, isn't it?
Well, I used to enjoy going to the dancing anyway, but Mark was very good. He used to take himself away, didn't you? You used to take yourself away.
Well, not dancing, but cycling, yeah.
Yes, take him to the airport, got on the plane.
From what age?
No, I remember cycling at 15 and riding down, even 14, like after school on a Friday, like packing a hold all, but using the hold all as a backpack, and having my track bike and riding my road bike, wheeling my track bike and riding it down to the ferry, getting on the ferry. And getting off the other side, getting to Liverpool Lime Street, going where I needed to go, racing the weekend, and then getting the midnight ferry home.
From 15?
Yeah.
Were you never 15. Worried about him going off and doing that by himself at that age?
Well, you got used to it. The first time
flying,
you got
wasn't
a taxi, yes. The first time you got a taxi.
No, but do you remember, I lost my...
It was 60, yes.
But I remember, no, I must have been 13.
No, you weren't.
No,
that young.
I was. When I went to train, I was, because 16, you're junior anyway, so I'm 14. I wasn't even under 16 yet. I was under 14, so I must have been maximum 14. And I got it was before, like, kind of, it was a GB system, and they had, like, Sport England. And they had these yellow kits. It was when lottery funding first came in. And I got asked to go away and train with a junior team, like, you know. And I remember losing my plane ticket and being stuck in Manchester Airport.
Oh God. Did you phone home? What happened?
Yeah, I was panicking a bit. We got it sorted.
We got him sorted.
Did you panic?
No, because I knew I'd pay for another plane ticket. He did get sorted. But that's how keen he was. You know, how many teenagers take themselves off and
it's cold in here, Mum. Are you all right?
Well, no, it's home time.
Yeah. Relate.
It's home time now. But yes, how many teenagers are that keen that they want to compete so much that they'll take themselves on the ferry, cycle all the way down? I was very proud of him.
Mm.
Very, very proud of him. But that's why I think he's become a success like he has.
Do you sit glued to the TV when he's racing? Do you follow all the races still?
I do, but I can't watch them.
No.
I can't watch them. That last sprint, I start walking around the house and then my heart goes...
His grandma doesn't like it, does she?
His grandma doesn't like it.
She doesn't watch?
No, no. It gives us all palpitations.
Mm. She still thinks she wish I get her a proper job.
She's
a proper job?
I don't know. She said it. I got her on Instagram story saying it.
Oh, yeah, I saw that actually. Yeah, yeah. Mm. Do you wish you had a proper job?
No. What is a proper job? All I want is him to be safe. And that's all a mum wants of their children. You know, it doesn't matter whether they're 15, 25, 35, 45, you just want them to be safe and happy.
And that must be quite nice then, is it, when he comes home, because it's always easier to be confident that your child's safe and happy when you can see them.
Yes. Well, when he's home, he's my son. He's not the cyclist, he isn't that, he is my son.
I live right opposite my mum, my house is like directly opposite.
Did you see each other every day?
No.
No?
I do. Well, can you imagine if I was on his doorstep every day?
I'd be sat in peace and then I just hear the door bang on when she comes bundling.
No, I do. I love it when he's home because, you know, you get your... Not that he's a little boy, but you get your little boy back. Mm. I think your children are always your children. Mm. Doesn't matter how old.
Yeah, I'm quite lucky in that both my parents, I'm still, like, you know what I mean? They just still see me as their son. Like, you know, which is
are you known nice. As Mark Cavendish's mum then?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Why do you roll your eyes like that?
Because the shop doesn't help. People come in to see Mark Cavendish's mum.
Oh, no.
And, yes, it's... sometimes it can be really, really hard,
you're
especially when
it,
people want things or... And that's problem as well, you know. It's too easy for me being here to be... well,
visible.
To be visible,
well,
I think
it's just the fact that, like I said before, like, you have to say no to more things than you say yes, otherwise I can't ride my bike, you know. And I think it's important to remember that the reason people want something is because I ride my bike, and I have to ride my bike to be able to ride my bike.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I don't really just sit at home and turn off and race, you know.
But everybody thinks they're the only ones that ask
for
something. And that is...
And it's only a little thing they're asking.
Well, that's not their fault. Like, you know,
it isn't their fault, but they don't realise that they're just one of many, many, many people that ask for things.
But
and then you feel guilty saying no, but
like
you
take
have
it,
to.
Yeah, you feel guilty. You have to. You take it as a compliment that, you know, at least people, they're generally interested in what you're doing and happy to, you know, they support what you're doing, I guess. So.
Did you think back when he was getting the ferry by himself or lost his plane ticket in Manchester that he would achieve what he's done?
I knew he would achieve because he always, even at school, if Mark wanted to be top of the class, Mark would always be top of the class. He always...
had to win.
He had to win.
I couldn't just be the best I could be. I had to be the best of everyone.
I can remember...
Sometimes I wasn't the best of everyone, but I had to strive for
it. I can remember spelling test at school. And he wasn't top of that spelling test. The week later, he went through every single word so that he would be top the following week and get that cup. There was a quiz in the school, same thing happened. He came second. He was not happy coming second. He had to, the following year, because the quiz was every year, he made sure he knew. We went through all general knowledge of the island. It was an island quiz.
It wasn't, because the winning question was the capital of Peru.
Oh, well, I didn't
so
know.
Well,
I love how you remember that. Yeah.
All I
what's
remember
the
is
Lima.
Chicken Rock. Is Chicken Rock, the question on Chicken Rock.
Chicken Rock, yeah, that's
right. Yes, that
was
the
question.
So there's a little island, like, so there's the Isle of Man, and there's a little small island. I don't know if anyone lives there anymore. It was just one, it's a bird sanctuary. It's on the south of the island, Carpa Man. It's really nice. You always go there on a school trip where you go to just walk. Proper rough stretch of water, and... it was like, what's it? In between, there's a rock, like with a lighthouse on. And it's called Chicken Rock. And they're like, what's the island that's closest to Chicken Rock? And I said, the Isle of Man. And it was wrong, it's a coffin, man.
Yes, but he made sure he got that cup that following year.
But that's key, isn't it? It's not just wanting to win and getting annoyed about it, it's then going off and doing all the hard work that's required to come back and win. You know, it's going off and learning all those words and how you spell them. It's not just fancifully wanting to be the best.
No, he would get up, Mark would get up weekends, go out after school just to train, because he knew unless he trained, you can't do things without training.
Where does he get that from, do you think? Are you competitive like that?
No.
No?
Well, I don't know. I honestly don't know. Somewhere in the background, somewhere in the background. We must. There must have been. My father was competitive. He was. He wanted to be a professional footballer. Did you know that? Yeah. But then the war came, and all the opportunities weren't there when the war came. So my father was very sporty, but we never. The opportunities weren't there in those days. But no, I'm not sporty at all.
At the risk of embarrassing him, what's the thing that he's done that you're most proud of?
There's too many things that I'm proud of. Even when he was at school, making sure he won that quiz, I was proud of him. Winning his first ever race, I was proud of him. And now as an adult, I'm sure. How can I not be proud of him?
Your mum doesn't like giving interviews much, but she was great.
Nah, she's sound like her.
Nah, she's clearly really proud of you. That must be quite nice to see in her as well.
Yeah, like, it's nice. Like I said, I live opposite her and she'd message every night, do you want tea? You
know? really?
So.
And do you go for tea every night?
Not every night, but sometimes, like, yeah, I'll go over. She's like, I've cooked a chicken if you want to come over. So I was over the other night, just had some chicken, like, you know. Yeah.
Do you clear the dishes after yourself?
I do. I fill the dishwasher, yeah. But I quite like filling the dishwasher. Like, the system to it, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a mathematical mind coming back again. Do you get annoyed if somebody fills the dishwasher in a haphazard way then?
Yeah. Yeah.
What do? You tell them off or repack it?
Repack it. I stress out. Like, yeah.
Are you a bit OCD? That's taking it too far. That's being flippant about OCD. That's.
Yeah, I think OCD is it. Like, it's an illness, you know. Mm. I think I'm just organised, like, you know.
Do you need order though in your life? Do you need things to be a certain way?
Yeah. Like, since I've had kids, it's calmed down. Like, there was a time when, like. Yeah, like everything I had to be, like, I'm tidy. It was a time when like I was crazy about it, but now with kids you can't be, you know, but still everything has to have an order. Like, everything has to have a logical order, where it is on where things are in the house, how things go. Like, I like an order of stuff, you know.
So what about the future, Mark? Have you thought ahead to retirement or when that might come?
I haven't thought of when. There's been times when I thought it was going to be the end of the year that I was doing. And there's times when I think I'll go forever. I just don't really think of an actual date. I do think about my future. Like, I know it isn't going to last forever, but I think actually, like, it's quite funny that last year was, like, I got ill and then obviously crashed out the tour, but actually getting ill was by far the hardest thing I've ever had to do, was come back from that illness. But it actually made me think, you know what, if I can train for 6 weeks and be competitive with the Tour de France, then I'm still going pretty strong, I think, you know. So it gave me confidence that I've got a few more years, that's for sure.
Do you think, and everybody talks about the all-time record of Tour de France stage wins, which you're 4 off at the moment, if you got that, would that be enough?
If I'm only ever good enough to win one more tour stage, I'm only ever good enough. If I'm good enough to win 15, I'm good enough to win 15. There's no number that is definitive. I just, like always, I just want to win.
And when you see your future, you say you've thought about it, what do you see?
I don't really want to give too much away, you know. Yeah, just want to spend more time with family, that's for sure. But I've got ideas.
Would you still be involved in cycling, do you think?
I think so. Like, I love it. I just love it. Sure, I don't want to leave the sport, like, that's for sure.
So Since we chatted, Mark Cavendish has had a sparse season. A series of crashes has taken him out of a lot of race action, and he goes into next month's Tour de France as much an unknown quantity as ever. With just those four stage wins off the all-time record at the world's greatest bike race, in his 12th edition of the Tour, Cavendish will still be one of the sprinters to beat. His mum will still be watching through her fingers. Thank you to Jonathan Rowe for editing this episode of When Orla Met. If you've missed any of the chats, they're all available to download right now. If you have any thoughts on what you've heard so far, send me an email to orla@whenorlamet.com, and you can leave comments and follow me on Twitter and Instagram. And don't forget to not miss out on any of the conversations still to come. Please do subscribe to When Orla Met.